This podcast is brought to you by the Association for Child and Adolescent Mental Health, ACAM for short. You can find more podcasts and other resources on our website, www.acamh.org, and follow us on social media by searching ACAMH.
Hello, welcome to the In Conversation podcast series for the Association for Child and Adolescent Mental Health, or ACAM for short. I'm Jo Carlo, a freelance journalist with a specialism in psychology. Today I'm interviewing Dr. Vahana Mann, a psychiatrist and Wellcome Clinical Research Fellow at the Division of Psychiatry at University College London. Vahana is going to give a general overview of the landscape of loneliness and its impact on children and young people. Vahana, welcome. Thank you for joining me. Can you start with an introduction about who you are and what you do?
Thank you very much for having me on. I am, as you mentioned, a psychiatrist, so I'm a doctor in London, and I'm also a researcher at UCL.
And you are particularly interested in social relationships, loneliness, and their association with mental health. What prompted this interest?
In fact, I started off my research journey in the laboratory, so quite removed from the field I now find myself in. First degree was in immunology and cell pathology. But then after medical school, during the time I was training as a psychiatrist, I would, of course, spend lots of time figuring out as a team how to help people in the real world with mental health problems. And as psychiatrists, we try to do that in a number of ways. But at the core of it all is the hope of forming a sincere connection with another human being in order to work towards recovery. And the other thing that I noticed was that whenever I was on call in the middle of the night or in an emergency situation, I would tend to worry less about the people I knew had a network of supportive relationships outside of the clinical context. So the people that I knew had someone to turn to if things were to deteriorate. And it became increasingly clear to me that for most people, there was something protective and helpful about positive social relationships and potentially harmful about a lack of them, and that we're inherently a social species.
Let's talk about loneliness. It's not the same as solitude. And sometimes people talk of feeling lonely even when they are amongst other people. So yeah. I think it would be really helpful to start with a definition of loneliness.
I mean, it's important because there are a number of related concepts when it comes to the broader field of social relationships. And we've written a bit about that. But it is important then to try to define exactly what we mean when we talk about loneliness. A definition that I like, and there are a few broadly, what they mean is that it's a perceived mismatch between the quality or quantity of social connection that a person has and what they would like. So crucially, we're talking about a pervasive, unpleasant experience. In our research, the experience of loneliness that we talk about is normally one that a person finds undesirable. And the other thing to mention is that there is, of course, overlap between different concepts. So, for example, the idea of being physically isolated isn't the same thing as feeling lonely. But if you are isolated, you're more likely to feel lonely statistically. So they will cross over in that way.
What does the research show in terms of the impact of loneliness on both physical and mental health?
So there is now a good amount of scientific evidence to show that loneliness is associated with both physical and mental health problems. One very highly cited paper highlighted how loneliness specifically was associated with a risk of dying earlier in adults from all causes after adjusting for various other relevant factors. Thinking about physical health first, in terms of physical health, loneliness is associated with lots of poorer kind of physical health outcomes, including cardiovascular health, so things like blood pressure or strokes, altered immune function, poor sleep, and poorer outcomes in lots of other chronic health problems. But what was a bit surprising when we first started looking into loneliness and its effects on mental health was that there was relatively less good quality research on it out there compared with physical health. But we do know that loneliness is strongly associated with problems like depression and anxiety. And from our own reviews, we know that people with existing mental health problems tend to do worse if they're lonely compared with people with mental health problems who aren't experiencing loneliness. And there's also growing evidence that loneliness is a major concern for many people with severe mental health problems like schizophrenia or other psychotic health issues or bipolar disorder, as examples, as well as other issues like personality disorders. So lots of people with a range of different kinds of mental health issues will experience loneliness. And it's looking at it, whether loneliness kind of leads to the onset of mental health problems, but also what impact being lonely has on people who have mental health problems. So those are all things we need to better understand.
What does the research say on that last point?
Well, for most of the research that's out there at the moment, and there's lots still going on, is on depression. And certainly in that, it seems to be that there's a reciprocal relationship. So that if you're lonely and you don't have depression, you do seem to be at increased risk of getting depression. Again, most of that is from studies of older people, but also that if you have depression, you're more likely to experience, to become lonely over time. So it does seem to be both ways.
Now, when we talk about loneliness, usually people think about elderly people. So nearly all public health discussions around loneliness do focus on older people. Why is that, do you think?
Yeah, no, I agree. So that's certainly what we've found when we've conducted reviews of the evidence, that the vast majority of published research is in older people. And that's changing. There is more being done in younger people. Most of it is in people aged 65 or more. I think that potentially a number of reasons for that, including the fact that we tend to see old age as a more perhaps obvious time for people to experience loneliness, as they may have gone through bereavement, younger family moved away, less likely to be in the workplace or get around due to physical disability, etc. And the science backs that up to an extent, in that when you study cross sections of the population and look for sort of who is experiencing loneliness and it being a problem, there is a peak in older people. But crucially, when you do that, you see that there is also a peak in young adults, kind of 16 to 25. And I think recently in the UK that there was even more of a problem in young people. So we have seen a shift to try to better understand what's happening across the age range, and especially in young people.
And how prevalent is loneliness amongst children and young people?
So it's a good question. Again, following on from what you mentioned before, we have less data across different populations to draw on compared with in older people. But, and especially we know probably the least about very young children, kind of under 10s. And what we tend to know tends to come from Western countries. But some of the estimates and from the data that we have is, so one Finnish study looked at cohorts of 8-year-olds over many years, over 4 years, and they found about 20% of the kids reported loneliness is an issue, but about 5% said it was more of a persistent problem. And the things that you could draw from that research included that children who reported more loneliness were more likely to come from a kind of non-nuclear family, have parents with a lower level of vocational education, and also have experienced negative life events. And over time, there was a strong link with having psychiatric problems and having been lonely. In a recent ONS survey, so that's in the UK, in children a little bit older, so 10 to 15, about 11% of kids overall said that they often felt lonely. Again, things that you could pick out were that it was higher in children on free school meals. So if you live in a city versus a rural area, and also if your general health was worse. And interestingly, if you specifically had difficult family relationships. And then in the older group, so 16 to 24, I know they're not necessarily children, but young adults, about 10% said they often felt lonely. Again, it was much higher in certain circumstances. So if you had any kind of disability or long-term illness, and also if you lived in a single adult household, it was higher, much higher than that, but on average, about 10%.
Right. So it's pretty high, actually. And you also seem to be implying there's some kind of link between deprivation and loneliness.
Yes. So we know that is the case in sort of mental health problems in general. It's not, it doesn't mean that you only get mental health problems if you experience deprivation, not at all, but there is that association. So it's very relevant. And we are finding that that is the case with loneliness, not just in young people, but in older and older people and other adults as well.
I want to look at the impact of loneliness on young people. What are your findings?
Young people typically go through a number of important transitions, including, for example, moving from primary to secondary school, perhaps going into university or entering the job market. So lots of kind of shift and change. In terms of impact, I'd say probably some important findings from a study of young people by Tim Matthews and colleagues was that lonelier young adults were more likely to experience mental health problems, but also to engage in physical health risk behaviours, and also to use more negative strategies in order to cope with stress. They were less confident in employment prospects, so their own sort of perception of their own employment prospects, and were more likely to be out of work. Lonely young adults as children were also more likely to have had mental health difficulties and to have experienced life events like bullying or being physically isolated. So all those things are looking like they are related.
How might parents or professionals pick up on the fact that a child or teenager is lonely? Is it something that's kept hidden, or are there particular red flags?
It's important to note that it could vary hugely depending on the child, their circumstances, their age, etc. And you may notice that they aren't perhaps engaging in social activities with friends. If there's been a change in behaviour, may become withdrawn, or in some people, it may be associated with a person feeling more anxious, for example. So how it's manifesting might be different. And as again, you suggested, it might not be obvious to a parent at all in some situations. But all of the issues that I mentioned earlier on, so things like bullying, low mood, poor self-esteem, feeling stressed, etc. All of those things may be relevant. So those might be the things that you pick up on. I think the key thing is not to be afraid to ask about it, but also to think about doing it in as sensitive and supportive a manner as you can, because what we do know is that young people have talked about it as being something that's very embarrassing to talk about. So don't let that stop you asking, but just be aware that it's something that might not be easy.
So how might a parent ask? Because I imagine if you said to a teenager, are you lonely? Don't you have any friends? that wouldn't land very well.
Again, it depends obviously on what the relationship is like between those two people and their level of and communication that they normally use. But I think keeping things open, starting off with a more open question about how things are, how they're getting on in general, and then, you know, it may invite someone to bring up certain issues around friendships, etc., if you're not feeling like going straight into the question.
Mm-hmm. And if you do pick up on the fact that your child is lonely, where's the first port of call for help?
Well, the first thing to note is that it may be very helpful in itself that you've opened up that conversation in the first place. Again, I know I sort of keep saying this, but one size won't fit all, depends on the child's age and also how that loneliness is affecting them. If it's some, you know, and what may be driving it, it may be that in somebody it's a sort of sense of lacking confidence in social skills, for example. So the approach may be something quite practical. It may be, well, we could perhaps practice what we might say in a conversation, you know, with a younger child or rehearse what we might do if it's that sort of issue. Mm-hmm. On the other hand, something more complex and you think actually it's a child who maybe has felt lonely for some time and actually you're worried about their mental health or they're feeling depressed, etc., then you could think about perhaps starting talking with a GP, going along together, or offering for the child to have a chance to talk with the doctor themselves. There are also other organizations, charities, places like that where you could reach out depending on how the problem was kind of manifesting. But certainly if you're worried about mental health, then an obvious point of contact could be picking up the phone and maybe having a chance to talk with a GP or someone else at the surgery that might be able to sound things out.
And what interventions are available to help children and young people deal with loneliness and social relationships? And what does the research show to be effective?
So this is an area of ongoing research. Again, most of research into what works to reduce feelings of loneliness is specifically looking at whether the loneliness reduces is in older people. So I wouldn't feel confident in saying we know exactly what type of intervention will work to stop young people feeling lonely because we're still trying to answer that question well. Mm-hmm. We can draw some conclusions from what we know from older people, but of course, the experience of loneliness at age 80 may be very different to what someone is going through when they're 15, for example. So we can't extrapolate too much. But one thing to keep in mind is that there are different levels that we can approach the issue of an individual's loneliness, you can work with the individual, so kind of at the individual level, or there can be interventions more at a community level, whether things like opportunities for volunteering, social prescribing, things like that, and then much wider interventions that may be direct or more indirect, tackling things like poverty, for example. And all of those things need to happen at those different levels. So it isn't just about working with a person who's lonely, but also thinking about the context in which that person exists. But thinking specifically about the individual level, there is some evidence that helping people shift their ways of thinking about the loneliness could help reduce it through approaches like cognitive behavioral therapy, for example, or other individual therapies that may look at things like a person's social identity. But it is early days in terms of specifically in young people demonstrating what is most effective for whom.
And should the whole family be involved? Is it important to involve parents and carers in any interventions?
I mean, in general, I'm a strong believer in involving family in a positive way whenever possible. But of course, that could be easier in some situations and maybe more appropriate in some situations than other. For example, in younger children, that may be easier. Not necessarily, but it might be. And there's always a need to balance inclusion with sort of being intrusive into a young person's space. But there are ways around that. You can offer a space for a young person and another space where they could also talk with family. And there's certainly the evidence I mentioned earlier that young people who have more difficult family relationships in particular are more likely to struggle with loneliness. So I definitely think it's a very important consideration in mental health in general, but particularly with loneliness.
What about digital technology? Is that being used to help young people feel better connected?
Yeah, this is an area of research that I definitely would like to see grow. We tend to hear more in the media about sort of harmful effects of tech, quite rightly, in many situations like social media, how it can crush self-esteem or, you know, provide a platform for bullying. And those are very, very important considerations. So that should continue to be something we think about. But there's also a need to better understand how technology can be part of the solution, because I'm confident that in many situations it already is and can be. So young people spend a lot more time, of course, using technology to connect than people my age or older. And I honestly believe there is huge potential for tech to do good. My own contribution partly is that I am co-founder of a social impact company myself, Ketka, where we use storytelling to help children from a very young age explore ideas around making friendships, around social skills, around other aspects of things like self-esteem, bullying, etc., through adventure stories, and connect parents into the picture too, so trying to bring families into it. So I think there's lots of innovative and creative ways we can bring families together and explore mental well-being in a sort of fun way that's accessible and can be scaled. And we're also trying to build in sort of research to try and demonstrate how it works and who it works for. So it's an area that's growing, but I definitely think there's lots of potential.
Right. Do you have a link for Ketka in case anybody wants to look that up?
Yes, absolutely. So it's ketka.co.uk. K-E-T-K-A.
Vahana, we are speaking in 2020 during the coronavirus pandemic, and we are currently in lockdown. This situation may change over the coming months, but I'm wondering what you feel the impact is in relation to young people and loneliness, given that currently children and teenagers cannot meet up and socialise with their friends in the normal way. Any thoughts on this?
Yes. I have to say they won't necessarily be evidence-based thoughts at this stage, but that will change as there are a number of institutions globally, including UCL, conducting rapid research into the effects of this kind of isolation or loneliness on mental health. And what we know is that it's likely to affect different people in different ways. It's certainly possible that young people who don't have access to technology, for example, could become quite cut off from their networks and experience loneliness. But at the same time, young people are better at using tech in general to connect than other people. So it may be that many will adapt very well. I was speaking to a parent the other day who said her daughter, who's 11, was old enough to live her life on social media, but not old enough to be going out and socializing with friends. So lockdown actually suited her very well. So it will affect different age groups in different ways. It'll be important, I think, in particular, to see what happens to young people who already have existing mental health problems and then experience the lockdown on top of it. And of course, aside from the loneliness and related issues, issues like uncertainty about education, worrying about their family's health or their own health, employment, etc., will all be relevant to their overall mental well-being.
I believe you've commented in the past that researchers need to be more proactive in involving young people in the research process. Is this starting to happen? And if not, what can be done to make research in this area more relevant?
I think certainly in mental health, we are getting better at including a wider range of voices in the research process. So from the very early stages of even planning the research questions through to disseminating findings, it's now an essential requirement for most grant applications, and that's a good thing. But the key now is to make sure that we continue to do that, but also ensure that the involvement of service users or young people in the general population is done in a sort of meaningful manner, and also that those young people are as representative as they can be of the people whom we're trying to sort of learn about or learn with.
And how does one go about involving young people in the research process?
There are lots of ways of doing that, and I'm sure there are people listening who will suggest even more. It depends on whom you're trying to reach. For example, if it's people with existing mental health problems, or whether it's carers or people in the general population who don't have existing mental health problems, working with third sector organisations we found can be extremely helpful. So having partnerships in that way, as well as sort of universities or schools, and of course using social media. But the thing I think is most challenging is reaching some of the more vulnerable groups of young people who may not typically get their voices heard, and that does require a bit more effort.
Thank you. What more would you like to see in terms of research? Are there any current projects that excite you?
Yeah, there's lots going on. I would like to see more good quality research into the effects of social media and how young people are engaging with it. It all changes so rapidly that it can be hard for researchers to keep up. And at the same time, there's this wealth of potentially life-saving information and data to be learned from. So it's about sort of doing it responsibly and rapidly so that it can translate into something useful, like a real-world intervention.
And is there anything you believe should be done at a local or national level in terms of policy, resources and training and so on to improve the situation?
If I had to pick one thing, what keeps coming up is that poorer mental health in general, physical health for that matter, is associated with poverty and deprivation. And that's also the case for loneliness. Now, while that's not everything, I do think that wider measures that give children and their families and young people a stronger sense of security in that sense will help.
Fahana, finally, what is your takeaway message for those listening to our conversation?
Well, I would say don't ever underestimate the power of connecting with another human being, whether in person or remotely. If you're struggling, one of the most powerful things you can do is share what you're going through with someone you trust. If you're not lucky enough to have those connections at home or have close friends, then don't hesitate to pick up the phone and attempt to speak with a person from a support organisation or reach out to them through social media, because it's a very good place to start.
Brilliant. Thank you ever so much. For more details on Dr. Fahana Mann, please visit the ACAM website, www.acam.org, and Twitter at ACAM. ACAM is spelled A-C-A-M-H.
This podcast was brought to you by the Association for Child and Adolescent Mental Health, ACAM for short.